CBC's ombudsman said the public broadcaster's report linking U.S. commentator Ben Shapiro to radical extremists was objective and fair.
Despite the Ontario government's attempts to weed out far-left terms from government, a study found that the public school system was riddled with references to critical race theory and similar ideas.
Canada was ranked dead last among 10 high-income countries when it comes to access to primary care physicians. Hello, Canada. It's Tuesday, March 26th, and this is the True North Daily Brief. I'm Cosmin Jurja.
And I'm Noah Jarvis.
We've got you covered with all the news you need to know. Let's discuss the top stories of the day and the True North exclusives you won't hear anywhere else. The ombudsman overseeing Canada's public broadcaster recently ruled that a report linking conservative U.S. commentator Ben Shapiro to extremists and far-right groups was sustainable and fair. The CBC published a 2022 article titled, "It's a Slippery Slope, How Young Men Fall into Online Radicalization." The article cited a podcaster as an expert who said Shapiro's content is used by extremists, far-right groups, as an entry point that exposes young men to harmful comments and posts on platforms like TikTok, YouTube, and other apps. CBC's attempt to link Shapiro to far-right extremism led to a complaint to CBC Ombudsman Jack Nagler by Jamie McDonald, who argued that the public broadcaster had no evidence to back up its claims. "What we have here is state-sponsored propaganda written by someone with a particular ideological bent, as well as an aversion towards Mr. Shapiro and those like him who uphold traditional Judeo-Christian values," wrote McDonald. The complaints prompted a review by Nagler, although CBC added an editor's note to the story, the report was largely unchanged. In his conclusion, Nagler did conclude that using the term expert to describe a podcaster was an, quote, "amorphous descriptor." While noting that the article had areas in which it could improve, ultimately Nagler upheld the report without any significant changes. Noah, we know that the CBC will take any attempt to slam on conservatives, and this is obvious in this case, and I think the criticisms presented in this complaint are very fair. The CBC does have a ideological bent. It is state-sponsored propaganda. It relies on the government for most of its revenue, and the government continues to up that revenue in an attempt to buy positive coverage and coverage that criticizes opponents to the liberals who are in power right now. What do you take away from Nagler's response to this particular review? Because I've seen him make certain conclusions that were fair. I've noticed with like the Freedom Convoy, he's actually erred on the side of objectivity. But in this case, it seems like he's doing the wrong thing.
Maybe that's a trend that you've spotted with this specific editor, but in my time covering these sorts of stories in which the CBC receives complaints from their audience, the CBC, they're a lot more inclined to agree with the original decisions of the editor and the author rather than to fess up to their the problems with their original article and to correct them. At the end of the day, the CBC, they do everything in their power to make it look like they are doing everything right, that they are a trusted public broadcaster, the shining beacon of journalism in Canada, where the reality is a lot different. The reality is that the CBC, they are a left-wing rag. They do not report on conservatives fairly, and this article was a clear example of the CBC's bias against conservatives. If the CBC actually wanted to demonstrate that they are an objective news organization, they would have either retracted this article or made some severe edits to the article. For example, where the article cites Ellen Chloe Bateman, a podcaster, as an expert to pontificate on this matter, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Calling a podcaster an expert is truly meaningless, and it just degrades the value of the word expert. Anybody could be a podcaster, like literally anyone with a microphone and a camera, or you don't even need a camera. Anyone with a microphone can start a podcast, and for you to be just be called an expert just by having a podcast doesn't make any sense. All you have to do is pull someone's podcast who has an opinion that corresponds with yours to basically come up with whatever you want them to say, and there you go, you have your story. So calling this podcaster an expert and for that to be the basis of your article, it A, doesn't make any sense, and B, it just shows that the CBC's quality of journalism goes down, especially when they're trying to attack conservatives for, as Jamie McDonald mentioned, for traditionally held Judeo-Christian values. So I'm not really surprised that the CBC are not backtracking on this article, that they really should be retracting. But, you know, that just goes to show the lack of integrity that the CBC truly has as an organization. Critical theory, including critical race theory and gender theory, have run rampant in Ontario schools in the last decade, a new study finds, even with a progressive conservative government at the helm for the past 6 years. New research from the University of Toronto finds that critical theory has become a fundamental part of the education curriculum since it was introduced in the 1990s. The findings come in a master's thesis from Stephen Reich titled, "Does Ontario's Ministry of Education Promote Critical Theory in K-12 Education?" The thesis found that under the stewardship of Ontario's sole NDP Premier Bob Rae, critical theory was introduced into the province's education with amendments to the Education Act in 1992 to recognize the pursuance of anti-racism and ethno-cultural equity policies. These amendments were spurred by a government report written in reaction to Los Angeles's Rodney King riots and Toronto's subsequent Yonge Street riots. Reich researched the use of critical theory terminology such as systemic racism, intersectionality, and microaggression, and found that the use of these terms began in the mid to late 2000s, spiked in the 2010s under the Liberal government, and have continued under the current PC government. From 1997 to 2001 and 2017 to 2022, the use of critical theory terminology has grown 1,730% in the Ministry of Education's documents aimed for use by teachers in the classroom, Reich found. The study noted that critical theory language has permeated the curriculum and teacher resource documents, with critical theory most entrenched in health and physical education literature. Critical theory terminology was found to be and roughly equally pervasive in humanities and science and technology literature. So, Cosman, I know you don't live in Ontario, but I've occasionally heard the Premier of Ontario talk about how they have attempted to reform the education system since 2018, since they've taken over the reins from Premier Kathleen Wynne. Yet, in my experience, not much has changed in the Ontario education system. And in fact, the Ontario education system has increased their priorities in wokeness since the PCs have taken over government. And I know a lot of conservatives who voted for them in 2018 are quite disappointed by that sort of change in rhetoric and their decision to not pursue conservative education matters thoroughly. So, Cosman, what do you think is necessary for a future conservative government, or for any government of any party stripe for that matter, to remove critical theory from Ontario's education system?
Well, look, I just think this study shows how deep-rooted this stuff is. It goes back years, if not decades. And, you know, Doug Ford promised voters that he would reform the sex ed curriculum. He never did that. He went back on so many promises. I used to live in Ontario, and I remember that election specifically, and it just seems like he's a totally different person by now. And I don't think there's been any serious effort to reform some of this stuff. And you really have to take a blanket approach because it's not only written into law, it's written into curriculum, it's written into just the training that public servants receive. So until you really tackle it from a whole system approach, then there's nothing you can really do because it's going to continue. Activists have really slithered their way into these systems and taken over.
No, you're right, Cosman. As you mentioned, it's written into law. Back in the 1990s, the Education Act in Ontario was amended so as to ensure that the education system focuses on matters of race and ethnicity, which, in my opinion, they should not be dealing with that whatsoever. They should be focusing on reading, writing, and arithmetic, sort of the classic values of the education system. But Ontario has long departed from that since the 90s. So, Cosmin, do you find that in BC there is a similar system of rigidly enforced critical theory in the schooling system?
Well, in BC it's even worse, especially with like the gender ideology stuff. We have a thing called SOGI, sexual orientation and gender identity, which is pretty much a religious dogma for educators and this government, the NDP government here in BC. And it's fortunately being fiercely opposed by protesters. I've seen protests pretty much every single day, if not every weekend here in BC, where people are speaking out against some of the curriculum changes here. But what's important is parties have to offer an alternative, because simply like ignoring the issue and just like erasing everything isn't a solution necessary. You have to provide a serious alternative and focus on the basics of education, things like mathematics, language skills, life skills. And until that happens, I don't think anything will change. So a serious alternative is what's needed. Canada stood around the middle of the pack for access to a primary care provider in 2016. The country's position plummeted to dead last year, according to the Commonwealth Fund, which surveyed 10 high-income countries. The Commonwealth Fund's International Health Policy Survey analyzes the healthcare experiences of the general population aged 18 and older. Aspects such as primary care and mental health care, use of information technologies, prescription drug use, chronic illness care, behavior factors affecting health, and social service needs are evaluated. The 10 countries analyzed were the Netherlands, New Zealand, United Kingdom, Germany, Australia, Switzerland, France, Sweden, the United States, and Canada. An average is derived for every statistic from the 10 countries. For the proportion of adults who reported having a doctor or place they usually went to for medical care in 2016, Canada stood at 93%, 2% below the average, but above Sweden, the United States, and Switzerland. The Netherlands also fell between 2016 and 2023 from 100% to 99%. In 2023, Canada fell to 86% in this category, 7% below the average and beneath every single country. Also, the number of Canadians able to get same or next day appointments decreased by 20% between 2016 and 2023, going from 46% to 26%. It's astounding to me that the Liberal government thinks it can solve the healthcare problem when they're bringing in so many people into Canada. We have record level immigration, and I honestly don't see a way forward until we hit the brakes on immigration, because not only are they bringing in, you know, families, they're also bringing in seniors and elderly people. I remember years back when Ahmed Hussein was the immigration minister, he changed the rules so that you can come into the country, into Canada, if you have a serious condition like cancer or something that will require pretty much lifelong care. And this is putting a huge strain on the system. You can't even get doctor's appointments if you have a primary care physician for a month or weeks. Similarly, in my province at least, all of the walk-in clinics are shutting down. Noah, how is immigration tied to this problem, and are these two situations linked?
They're absolutely linked, Cosman. This is a basic supply and demand issue, and you're bringing in more people who are using the healthcare system. There's just going to be a lot more stress that is placed on the system, and Canada's healthcare system was not in great shape back in 2016. We still had a lot of people who were waiting hours and hours in line just to get basic treatment at an emergency room. But now it is worse because you have a lot more people who require these healthcare services, and you don't have a corresponding increase in the amount of hospitals and the amount of nurses and the amount of doctors working in the healthcare system. And so an already strained healthcare system is made worse by all the newcomers that we are bringing into Canada. And it's not like we're bringing in a bunch of nurses and a bunch of doctors who is going to help the healthcare system. Instead, we are bringing in a lot of immigrants from low-income countries who are perhaps not the most educated or who are coming to Canada to get an education, perhaps not getting an education in the healthcare industry, but are instead perhaps getting education degrees in the humanities and in other spheres, which is important, of course. But when you're not increasing the proportion, the amount of doctors that is serving in the healthcare system, and you're increasing the amount of people who need to be served artificially, this increases not by, you know, a lot of babies being born and they need treatment, but instead is just, you know, people who are of middle age who come to this country. They expect to receive a good life with good social services in the same way that Scandinavian countries and a lot of European countries provide social services to their people. And instead, they receive a lower quality of service than expected because not only is their arrival hampering the system, but the people who are originally already dealing with a strained and stressed healthcare system are also trying to access that system. So pouring money into the healthcare system is what provinces and the federal government is going to try to do. You're not going to have a lot of premiers with the political courage to make meaningful reforms to the healthcare system. I know Premier Daniel Smith has made some changes as to how healthcare will be delivered in the province of Alberta, but even that is a change that doesn't go far enough to change the public-private dichotomy that we have with the healthcare system that is so hampering our ability to deliver healthcare in a better way for Canadians. So so long as we have high levels of immigration and political cowardice at the provincial level, we're going to continue to see Canada's statistics and our just outcomes in healthcare plummet.
That's it for today, folks. Make sure to check in at www.tnc.news throughout the day for all the news you need to know. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to share our work with your friends and neighbors, and if able, please consider supporting independent media at donate.tnc.news.